Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
This is Kevin O'Brien of EWTN's Theater of the Word. I'm excited also to teach middle school and high school literature, speech, and drama with homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. Your student can meet with me online for a live, interactive class. Whether you take apologetics with John Martinoni, or grade school with Jackie De La Viaga, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, online Catholic learning for your homeschooling family is available for you.
This episode is brought to you by Hallo, the number one Catholic app. Hallo has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallo meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallo.com/breadbox.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to homeschool in Australia? Today's guest, Charbel Raish, will give us a peek into the unique qualities of his family's Australian homeschool. Stay with us.
Welcome to Homeschooling Saints, the podcast that helps you create the homeschool you love for the people you love. Our host is Lisa Maladnik, a Catholic life coach, TV host, best-selling author, and an instructor at Homeschool Connections.
Welcome, I'm Lisa Maladnik, and this is Homeschooling Saints. Today, we're getting a wonderful look into an Australian homeschool with Charbel Raish. Charbel Raish is married to Christine, and they have been blessed with 7 children together. Charbel has a passion for helping people get closer to discovering the fullness of truth and invites anyone who is willing to help him on this mission of evangelization through parousiamedia.com. Charbel has 2 degrees, a Master of Arts in Theological Studies from the University of Notre Dame in Sydney, and his undergraduate degree in Personal Development and Physical Education from the Australian College of Physical Education in Homebush Bay. He has over 10 years of experience as both a phys ed teacher and religion teacher for primary and secondary schools. Currently, Charbel is working full-time with Parousia Media, his greatest passion, which specializes in faith formation resources and events. Over 1 million people have been evangelized through the work of Parousia Media, and well over 300,000 resources have been distributed over that time. That's really amazing, Charbel. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, yeah. It's really neat to talk to you because we talked earlier in the school year about fatherhood and ministry, and I'll post the link to that original conversation in our show notes along with parousiamedia.com. But it's just fun getting to know you, and now to look at kind of a peek inside your homeschool to see what it really looks like. So why don't we just start with kind of what motivated you and Christine to take this dive into homeschooling?
It was right when we were married. We just got married, and you know, those early discussions about having children and what would be the plan, what would we do, where would we send them? We actually weren't considering homeschooling until a friend of ours who was a homeschooler. His name is David Obeid, and he's a good friend of mine. And he really showed us the benefits of it. He had one line there where it really impacted me. He said, "Do you want to give your children the best part of your day or the worst part of your day?" So It was almost like, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, you know, typically you'd get up, go to work. And in most cases, you know, mum and dad working, going off to work, you know, drop the kids off at school, and then you don't see them all day. Then you come back late in the afternoon or evening, and you're basically straight into dinner and bed, and it's over. And so you don't really have bonding time. You're giving them the end of your day while you're exhausted and tired. So with homeschooling, you can actually be your best and give the children the best of yourself. So in the morning, you are there, you know, and the mum and dad are there, and you can both be present. That really had an impact, I have to say.
Yeah, that's an eye-opening statement, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. That was in our first year of marriage when I heard that, and I chewed over that. I still was considering schooling, though, because there was many homeschoolers that I came across that homeschooled for one reason and one reason only, and I was like, I don't know if I want to homeschool just for that reason. So the reason was because in the Catholic systemic schools, the religion classes were not I guess, in line with the church's teaching. The many non-Catholics or many, you know, non-traditional views or non-orthodox views were being taught. And, you know, it is a problem. It can be very confusing for your children if they're wanting to learn the Catholic faith and the teachers themselves are not believing in it. So that was a problem. And so many homeschoolers would say they're avoiding the bad teaching of religion. And so that was sort of drummed into me in the early years. And I remember I was actually just starting teaching at a Opus Dei school where I was actually the religion teacher. And I thought, well, I'm not teaching all that stuff. I would like to think I'm a good religion teacher and teaching orthodoxy. And so if that's the only reason, well, then we've got no problem because I taught at a boys' school and my sons would come there. And that was the plan even after they were born. I said, yep, we're still on track with that plan. But there is a longer list of why you homeschool, and I'm happy to go into that a bit later on.
Oh, yeah. At any moment as it comes to you, those reasons are so important to all of us. I mean, I happened to read books while I was pregnant with a very late life pregnancy that were written by Kimberly Hahn and Laura Berquist and got fascinated with the idea that you could bring a child up in an atmosphere of love and faith throughout the day. Like it didn't have to be a separate subject. But it took me a number of years to convince my husband. So we ended up pulling her out after the fourth grade. But I know so many people, like there are as many reasons for homeschooling, you know, with lots of overlap and intersection, but so many, as many different families as there are different reasons. It's always very interesting.
Absolutely. And the more homeschoolers I met, the more, you know, it was growing on me, the more I was seeing the virtue in some of the children, you know, the respect they had for their parents, the way they would get along with each other and even different age groups. So, you know, teenagers getting along with primary age students, we call it primary. I think it's elementary where you are.
Yes.
But those younger, you know, mixing of age groups. So there's a bit of a holistic, interaction there. You know, typically in a systemic school, you are, you know, grade three, grade four are sticking with their own age, and of course for right reason. But at the same time, they're still not getting that experience mixing with other age groups as well. And homeschooling is sort of in that every day. And you're mixing in with different age groups and playing with different age groups. I think that, you know, that's also healthy as well. And that showed me, wow, they could get along. Doesn't matter how old they are.
Yeah, it's a lovely thing to see how many homeschooled teenagers willingly dive into a game with younger children and how caring they can be, what wonderful fathers and mothers they are being brought up to be, and whether they become priests and religious or they actually form families of their own, that experience of being parental, of being so humble and so service-oriented with younger children, it's just fantastic training.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And as time went on, the list for why we homeschool changed from being because there was bad religion in Catholic schools to all these other positive reasons. And I'd love to go through them now with you.
Sure. I'd love to hear your
growing.
Yeah. it's so interesting.
And I have to admit, myself being a teacher, my wife being a teacher, we were both in Opus Dei schools who were teaching the faith, and we were both loving our jobs, loving our community, loving where we're at, daily mass. I mean, it wasn't as though we weren't getting a good exposure. So if there was a school you'd send them to, you'd send them to these types of schools. But even with that considered, there were still all these other reasons, and I'll go through them now. The number one, yes, giving your children the best, but number two, the bonding you have with your children. So throughout the day, you know, you are, I remember going to work and coming back and I would miss so many moments in the day, and my wife would always update me and she got to see them, you know. So, you know, the first steps of the children or the all these different little milestones and the different creative things that they do. And imagine, you know, in a typical situation, when they're at school and they're discovering things for the first time, well, they're doing that without the parents. And then they come back to tell the parents, which is great, but you're not there to experience it. In the homeschooling situation, you're there all the time to experience those discoveries and those light bulb moments in your children's lives, to see them transform, you know, day after day. And when you look back, you know, you don't see the day-to-day effects, but looking back and you see, wow, they really are growing up, or they really are getting it, or they're starting to learn. It's amazing. Just the idea of learning to read and write, the fact that they could do that, and not only do that, but sometimes even advance further than the systemic school. So, you know, they could advance in the grades. If they're a 5 or 6 year old and they're typically in kindergarten or grade one, in homeschooling, they could very easily advance to, you know, grade two in half the time. And so you notice this throughout their lives. And we said, okay, so academically speaking, they're also getting very good training. Now, my wife is a teacher, so that does help. Not that you need to be one, but the fact that she used what she learned and applied it. But then we realized very quickly, we don't have to follow the school's curriculum. We don't have to follow what the state is expecting. We do have to follow a basic outcomes expectation. Like, we have an inspector that comes around each year. It's very easy, but we do above and beyond what the requirements are. So when they see our programs, they're like, oh, wow, okay, yep. It's only a 20-minute meeting, and they move on. And so we definitely want to give our kids the best, but consider it like tutoring. It's like a one-on-one tutoring scenario where the children are getting that one-on-one time with mum. And then there's also the personalized curriculum. So, you know, schools these days are trying their best to try to cater for the different levels of students. So you might have a child with special needs or needs a bit more time to develop. And so you need to create sort of work for them to catch up with the main body of the class. And then you might have some advanced kids that go ahead. So all of a sudden, within one cohort, you've got 20 or 30 students in the classroom and they're on different levels, and the teacher has to try guide them, but it's very hard to tailor that. But in homeschooling, it's quite easy, to see what each child's needs are, and you can personalize the education for them. And that's where the real gold comes in, because now you're doing what schools are wanting to do, but they don't have the resources. But in homeschooling, you can actually adapt quite easily at a fraction of the cost, and that's quite powerful. Look, the list goes on. It's so much fun. The timetable, the freedom of your own timetable. And I can share here, there was a moment when we did send our first two boys in school for one term. Now, a term is about 10 weeks in Australia. There are 4 terms a year. And one term, we had two boys at school and the rest of the children homeschooled. And so we had this double timetable. And I can tell you that the hour and a half to 2 hours of getting the kids ready, their uniforms, their lunches, they make sure they pack their bags, the diaries, they get in, and then that get them to school, and then you've got the return. So you've got the same amount of time in the afternoon, getting them through their homework, checking off things. You know, you've got to be up to date what the teacher's requests are, and then there's all this other extracurricular activity, and you think, wow, all this extra work. And homeschooling, you could get all that stuff done in just the time it takes to get them to and from school. You could actually get all the academic side of things done in homeschooling. So we thought, wow, look, let's stick to one timetable here, our own, and homeschool. And it's been such a blessing, and I have not looked back. And every day we do it, I'm just more and more convinced this is definitely the way to go, in particularly for our family at the very least. But I highly encourage everyone to consider it at least to see if it's for them.
Yeah, I've heard countless stories of people who have had to have a child home from regular school because of a surgery or because of an illness or something to do with the family maybe being on the move or something. And to their very great surprise, when the child goes back to school, they're way ahead of their peers. They've had a chance to really develop at their own pace. And another thing that you often see is that, especially now with the pandemic, is parents reporting kind of a, I don't know if they would express it as surprise, but this deep kind of awe and relief in a way that they're discovering that having their children home full time is lovely, that it's stressful figuring out the educational piece because they haven't had to do it before, but that they really enjoy their children's company.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree. And we're seeing more and more people inquire about homeschooling sort of long-term now, thanks to the pandemic, because they've had a taste of it. Now they're starting to consider, is this for me and our family? And it's great to see the reasons now. It's for many positive reasons. It's not for that one negative reason to avoid bad teaching. It's actually a long list of positive reasons. And that's what excites me for homeschoolers in the 21st century now.
And there's so many different styles of homeschools too. That's another thing that new homeschoolers are really delighted and at first maybe a little overwhelmed by, but there are as many ways to homeschool as you can kind of discover a different type of a kid or a different kind of a learner. There's so many different ways you can go. Can you describe to us what your homeschool is like?
Sure. Yes. Very much in the early years, it was very similar to following the school curriculum because my wife had the programs written. So that first couple of years, we were just sort of implementing what was done at the school because she was an elementary school teacher. She was early childhood and she would teach with those programs. And so that was the start. But then as we discovered companies like Seton Homeschooling, and there was a distributor in Australia that got them to Australia for us. And we said, oh my goodness, you've got images of Our Lord and Our Lady on the English books and mathematics. They're using images, holy images in every subject. It's like all of a sudden religion isn't just a subject. It actually is infused in all subject areas. And we're like, wow, okay. So that was our first sort of transition. In our third year, we started to implement the Seton resources. And then later on, discovering homeschool connections and then all the online world. So as the internet was, becoming a lot more, I guess, user-friendly, and more resources were being available, and our children growing up, we realized online there's so many more, and there's a wealth of resources now. There's almost so much that the harder decision is not what to find; it's actually what to choose, what to say no to.
Right.
You've got multiple options now, and so now that we sort of have a bit of a mismatch of we mix it up. So there's a little bit of what Christine, some of the secular books we use for particular subjects in some cases. But then there's Seton for a big chunk of it, especially in those early years. And then there's Homeschool Connections for our teenagers more so. And then there's a little bit of others as well, Memoria Press and some other resources. And of course, being part of a ministry, Parousia Media, it's great to be able to find other supplementary books and resources as well from our distributor. So it's nice to have Dad involved in a ministry that distributes resources, so we can get them at a fraction of the price, and that's been handy as well. So we have a bit of everything, and I can tell you right now, as the children are being homeschooled right now, as I speak to you, I'm in the bedroom. My wife now is in. We're in the dining room at the moment, and they're all sitting in around and going through their own work, and they work independently. So each child in their own age group has their own workbook to work through, and then we ask them to work through what they do know. What they don't know, leave to the end, and then just ask mum to help, but be patient, because sometimes, three or four come at you at once, and it's like, mum, I need your help, and we know that feeling, but we're trying to teach them to say, look, let one go before you, get on with something else that you do know what to do, and then come back to that one. And so once we do that, it's starting to help my wife, Christine, manage that. And then now that I'm working for my mom, I might chime in time to time and oversee how things going. And I would, just inspect the work and then give them some help as well along the way. So a lot of it is self, explanatory, a lot of the workbooks, but, we do that in the morning. All the sort of heavy duty lifting, all the things that challenge the mind in such a way. The sciences, mathematics, English, they are done in the early morning. They're the first subjects, and then the more fun stuff with arts and creativity and the science experiments and things like that, they happen sort of after lunchtime. So we try to take advantage of their alertness in the morning, and that's when they're switched on more, and give them those sort of more intellectual or the book work and things like that in the mornings. And then they get all the practical fun stuff in the afternoons. So that's how we try to stick to. And then there's some day outs as well. Lots of excursions. Before the lockdown, there was lots of excursions, but due to the pandemic, yeah, that we've been at home. That's another story.
Yeah, it's not our typical homeschooling time. That's another message for anyone listening who's considering homeschooling or has just started because of the quarantine, is that this is not typical. Usually our kids are a lot more free range. Could you talk a bit about that? Because Australia is so known for its beautiful natural just spaces, deserts and oceans, and incredibly beautiful. How does the outdoors typically, outside of pandemic time, how does it support the educational process for your kids? What does that look like?
Oh, we have so much fun normally because you're homeschooling during the school term. Everyone, the majority of the population, is at school, and so you can have days out and excursion days when it's very quiet. So you can, there's no waiting in lines. You can go to the museums. You can go to all the different national parks that we have. The beaches, and you can go there and there's no one around. There's only a very few amount of people because they're at work or at school. And so we can pick and choose our timing. And even we might have trips away where we go for a couple of nights and we'll go to caravan parks or things like that. It's quite an Aussie thing to do. We Australian, Aussies is our, we shorten lots of words. So the Aussie thing is camping and camping trips. There's some beautiful national parks, places with, you know, rivers there, and you know, we can rough it up and pitch the tents, or we can do what they call, I think it's glamping or something like that. It's like luxurious camping. So it comes with an ensuite or a cabin. We have a bit of fun. We try to get out as much as we can and experience and explore Australia. So, you know, it is beautiful, as you say. We go up and down the coast. Beautiful beaches, the children, they discover and they appreciate God's creation, and they get to do this, and they don't normally get to do this if they're at school. So they're very lucky to be able to and blessed to get these opportunities. I can tell you, we have like an annual pass for the famous Taronga Zoo, and so it's quite easy just to drive down. It's only a 25-30 minute drive into our famous zoo in Sydney. You can catch the ferry across the harbour. It's quite beautiful. And then you go into the zoo, you spend the day, and then you come back. And because we can avoid the peak hours, the traffic is very quiet. So you avoid going during those peak hours. So you're not stuck in traffic for 2 hours, and you can get in a fraction of the time. So all that time, all that flexibility we have just allows for more opportunity. So, the great outdoors, lots of beautiful Australian birds. We live on acreage. So we have 8 acres.
Oh, how nice.
We wake up to the birds, they're singing, and we have famous Australian birds, the different ones like the kookaburra.
I was just thinking of that one. We used to sing about that one in Girl Scouts. I don't know why.
Oh, wow. it's a great alarm, I can tell you. They wake up, they start singing in the morning, they do their famous kookaburra call, and then at night, at sunset, they do the same call. It's almost like they're getting ready for bed. And they do that. And they come in waves. So the kookaburras come first, then the magpies come, then the cockatoos come. And so they sort of, they don't all come out at once. They sort of, it's so interesting. They come out. And we sort of have this beautiful morning and evening, like sunset time, experience with the birds, and there's
like
beautiful
a concert.
Yeah, that's right. And the kids enjoy it. We have little a bird bath and a plate. We try to feed them and try to keep them coming back. So the kids love that. We have chickens.
Wonderful.
We get the eggs from, and the kids are responsible for that. And they run around. We have a soccer field that we've created, and just having that space does help. So being locked down on acreage doesn't feel like you're being locked down. So there is a lot of freedom. So we keep reminding the kids they are very blessed to have the space.
Oh, that's beautiful. And also, there's so many studies that the more time that we spend in the outdoors, the greater our cognitive function. It's so refreshing for the brain just to be out in nature. The colors, the fresh air, the activity, all of it is so good for us. And I was talking to someone earlier today who was saying that children who tend to be in school all day and on their phones and all their electronic devices, it's not that they're not creative or they're not imaginative, but it's really different. Like they seem to be more easily bored and more uptight. Whereas kids who can roam outdoors or can be on a more flexible schedule and be in a more natural environment just seem to be endlessly creative and able to be happy and amused and interested in things.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. My children now, you know, we have set up sort of a bit of a toolbox for the boys and a cubby house, a tree house. You know, now they're starting to create this on their own. They're not needing my help. They sort of are grabbing scrap pieces of wood, getting a hammer and a nail, and they're just going for it and just building things and creating things. And you know, it's so good to see. And we're just really letting them thrive and explore and make mistakes, let them learn, you know, they might hurt themselves but then they adapt and they just are learning and building things and creating things. And that creativity comes when you eliminate all the distractions. You know, the screen time is quite important. We have to watch how much time we have our kids in front of screens, even if it's good stuff. So we have to monitor. It's all in moderation. But being outdoors, as you say, it does really, it just brings the best out of them. And my wife and I have discovered this too. So we actually now, and thanks to the lockdown, we go out ourselves and we actually have a break. So afternoon tea, we do the Divine Mercy chaplet. And then after that chaplet, that's mum and dad go for a walk while the kids, that's their screen time. We'll let them sort of watch a documentary or do something like that. And then we'll go for a walk around the block and that's quite nice having that the older children now looking after the younger ones, so we can do those sort of things, duck out for 30 minutes and come back and have a little break, so we get to enjoy the outdoors as well.
Yes, and how important for them to see the two of you taking time for each other. And something else keeps occurring to me, Charbel, too, is there's this really what I think is a ridiculous and really such a harmful conversation going on in the U.S. Of course, we know there are all types of people and there are some bad men and bad women in the world. But this idea of toxic masculinity has taken hold of kind of young people's imagination to the point where I think that young men are really harmed. They don't understand the beauty of their own natural strengths. I get the feeling, correct me if I'm wrong, but is Australia a little more man-friendly?
Yes. We have a farming culture typically, although that's changing in the metropolitan cities. But for the most part, because Australia is vastly, it's a land. It's almost the same size as the United States.
I didn't realize it was that.
However,
big.
Most people, people live on the coast, and that's the thing. Most people are on the outskirts, and then as you go inland, you've got huge lands. You have 5,000 acres. The amount of hectares some people have, and you know, some people live in the dry spots, the desert, and so you've naturally got to be tough. You naturally got to try fight. You know, it can be hot and dry in the summer. It could be you experience all sorts of things. Four seasons in a day, especially
the
East Coast, you get it could be raining, then really windy, and then it becomes hot, and then it could be cold at night, and so you're sort of getting all sorts of things. It's not very consistent.
Wow.
But it depends where you are in Australia. The northern part of Australia is very tropical and beautiful. The southern part is very cold. Tasmania, things like that. They've got shorter days than us. Sydney gets a little bit of everything. And I do like Sydney. It is, generally speaking, moderate. It's not too extreme either way. However, you naturally got to get used to the wildlife. You know, you'll see wallabies and kangaroos on the outskirts of the city. You'll see spiders and snakes, that does scare a lot of Americans, but once you see them, you get used to how to deal with them. And we remember that the snakes are actually scared of us, and the right. spiders are scared of us. All we've got to do is for the one or two particular type of ones that we know of that are venomous, you don't make them angry. You just sort of don't freak out, and you let them go, and they just sort of they do leave you alone. So it's when you come across it a few times, then you get used to it. It's funny that it's the larger spiders that are less venomous, like the huntsman and those other ones, and it's more the Sydney funnel web that's quite dead, can be deadly for children if they're not treated, but or the redback spider, and they can be found, but it's quite obvious where they are because the way they do their web and their homes, they're sort of scrapped together leaves and things, and so you could see them. So we always are just cautious of it. And the kids now the boys, they go out, they pick up lizards, they pick up frogs, they do whatever, and they try to be tough on the outside and help their sisters, and they'll look after that. And but you're right, I mean, it's still like that, although I do, because of the internet, because of the media, it is certainly changing, and there is this sort of misconception that I guess it's almost like the men are needing to be they need to change not be so manly, or this idea that the man is stronger and more important, or that's the misconception out there, and women are weaker. And well, that's not what we believe as Catholics. It's not what we believe as men. Women are extremely strong. I don't think men can have children like women do, and to put up with the amount that you go through, and I just think that there's a whole conversation there, and the misconception of, I think, false feminism has sort of crept in, and that needs to be dealt with. We need a healthy masculinity and a healthy femininity, and they need to complement each other. We have roles, they're both beautiful, and we both complement each other. And I think once we know that, let's embrace that. Let men be men, let women be women, and watch the culture flourish.
Yes, amen. And I really think that even though many people have called this a post-Christian era, and it may be, I've also heard savvy evangelists say, no, it's pre-Christian. We're on our way into a Christian era. And I think that as Christianity, and especially the Catholic Church for its clarity, at least at its roots, not necessarily in the way it's practiced, but certainly at its core Orthodox teachings, is such a beacon of clarity and hope on this real love and appreciation for both the masculine and the feminine, and just how beautifully made they are by God and how good they are.
Amen. Amen to that. Yeah, thank you, Peter.
Yeah, so anything else that you'd like to share before we wrap? There's just so much to talk about with the Australian culture and its advantages, or how your particular homeschool is. What else would you like to leave us with before we wrap, Sharbel?
Yeah, you're not alone. So a lot, many people think that homeschooling, you're completely alone, but it is. I do encourage, if you have other homeschoolers that are in the area nearby, to connect with them, let the children interact. So that is quite healthy time to time. Yeah, we try on a Thursday have a weekly gathering. It's so interesting. My wife is part of a group. They call themselves the Awesome Mothers Group. And so the mothers come together, and then the children get to play. And that's sort of a bit more of a relaxed day, Thursday. And there's also another group, Providence, it's quite beautiful. And so then there's getting together and learning together. So classes are on that day. So sort of one Thursday, it's gathering together and doing more sort of structured formal work collectively with other homeschoolers. And then the other Thursday is just more of a fun play day. Now, they get to play anyway on the other days, but that's at least they're getting their work done. But there's also a very relaxed day. It could be a day out. They go to the zoo, or they go somewhere together, but at least they're getting that social interaction as well with other homeschoolers. And there are other groups that do sort of athletics days and sports days and things like that. So you could do whatever you like, make it as relaxed, as low-key or informal as you like, or as formal as you like. But I think it is a great help. It's not impossible to do it without anyone, but having others does certainly help you, and you can share ideas and sort of bounce ideas off each other. It's great to see my wife speaking with the other wives, and they're sharing ideas all the time, venting. but I think that's healthy. It's important that we have an outlet and someone to share the struggles that we're going through. So that helps. And then, you know, get our typical week quickly looks like Monday to Wednesday is a little bit as structured as possible. We try to get to Mass in the morning. We have all of our book work in the morning, and then we do all the arts and crafts in the afternoon. And then we stop for the Angelus, stop for the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and we have a rosary in the evening before dinner, or depending on and if dinner's ready or not. So it could be before or after dinner, depends on what's on that night. And then I try to read a Bible. I call it a Bible story before they sleep, and then they go to bed. And my wife and I continue to stay up, and we then connect and have time together. So it's important to both nurture the children's relationship between parents and children, but also that marriage. And I can't stress that enough. And we talked about that actually in the homeschooling conference, which we were part of recently, about how do we love each other as we want to be loved. And that's also very healthy. And it's healthy for the children to see that mum and dad look out for each other. So I think when they realize that, you get everything in order. And just have fun with it. Fridays is typically a day out, a fun day out as a family, or an excursion day. So that's how we try to keep it. And then, you know, weekends we do projects at home, and that's where I get involved a lot more. Having fun with it is what I would have to say. Enjoy the outdoors as much as possible. And get some help. You use the internet is there, and let's take full advantage of it and reach out. There's so many great organizations doing great work and lots of free stuff online too. So there is no shortage of assistance out there. Just got to look for it. And what you're doing is an attempt to do that, informing people about the beauty of homeschooling, the practical side of it, and sharing testimonies. So I think that alone will inspire people. And I encourage people to just keep searching, keep looking, keep praying, and do what's best for your family. And what does God want from you as a husband and wife, and from your children? So, yeah, that's a bit of everything there. But I hope I said enough.
Oh, yeah. No, it's so fun seeing inside someone else's homeschool and how it's structured and everything else. We appreciate you so much, Charbel. That was a ton of fun. And everybody, remember to find Charbel at www.parousiamedia.com. And that's in the show notes, but it's parousiamedia.com. And thank you again, Charbel, for taking some time with us just to let us have some fun and see what an Australian homeschool is like.
Absolutely. And everyone is welcome. Pray for Australia, the land down under. And we'll pray for everyone up there in the Northern Hemisphere as well. So it's great. This is what Jesus was talking about, the ends of the earth. We are at the ends of the earth. So we're praying for everyone up north as well.
Oh, we appreciate that so much, and count on our prayers too. Thank you. And everybody, stay tuned for our short feature coming right up.
Hi, I'm AJ Catapan. Welcome to Books and Blessings, a place where I get to share with you some of my favorite books for Catholic teens and tweens. Today, I'd like to introduce you to The Other Side of Freedom, a middle grade historical novel by Catholic author Cynthia Tony. In the year 1925, 13-year-old Salvatore, or Sal as his friends know him, lives in a farming community in the South. His Italian immigrant father is doing the best he can to provide for and protect his family. Unfortunately, both Sal and his father become unwitting participants and witnesses to a crime that results in the murder of an innocent man and family friend. Sal's father makes him promise not to tell anyone about what happened that night. If he talks about what he saw, he could risk everything he and his family cherish in their new homeland. Sal's hometown of Freedom is beset by bigotry, bootlegging, police corruption, and threats from gang members. Somehow, in the middle of all this, Sal must discover whom he can trust in order to protect himself and his family and win back his father's freedom. Sal's family, their African-American farmhand, and the girl who is Sal's best friend find their lives forever changed. The Other Side of Freedom is an engaging and suspenseful tale that will have readers hoping poor Sal and his family can find a way out of this mess they've gotten into. As a middle grade book, this is a quick read with likable characters. Sal's friendship with his best friend, Antonina, is the kind of friendship all kids want. A buddy they can be open and honest with. The kind of person with whom they can share all their secrets. As a work of historical fiction, this story offers some insight into what it was like for Italian immigrants who tried to be law-abiding citizens, but were often harassed and coerced by some of their fellow Italian-Americans who were mobsters. The Other Side of Freedom by Cynthia Tony has won numerous awards, including a Catholic Press Association Book Award, a Reader's Favorite Book Award, and the Catholic Writers Guild Seal of Approval. Cynthia is also the author of the Birdface series, a set of contemporary young adult novels. To see more book suggestions, visit my website at ajcatapan.com. There you can also learn about my own books for young readers, including my YA novel, Angelhood, and my middle grade novel, Seven Riddles to Nowhere. Thanks for joining me on Books and Blessings. Be sure to find me online on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, or on my website, ajcatapan.com. Until next time, happy reading.
That's our show for today. Our program is sponsored by homeschoolconnections.com, where you can get online courses for your grade school, middle school, and high school student. Learn from the experts and make your homeschooling easier. Be sure to leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. And we'll see you next time here on the Homeschooling Saints podcast.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.